Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case is 2021-483, the State of Ohio versus David Belleville. For the appellant, Ms. Spriggs.
Thank you, Chief Justice. May it please the court. My name is Addison Spriggs, and I'm here on behalf of David Belleville. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The right to a speedy trial is one of the cornerstones of the criminal legal system and is crucial to ensure that individuals who remain incarcerated and unable to afford bond are tried quickly. As a result, speedy trial time can only be told as specifically enumerated in 2945-72. Here, Mr. Belleville's speedy trial time had expired, and the trial court retroactively determined that his speedy trial clock had been told while supplemental discovery was pending. However, supplemental discovery cannot be the basis for retroactive tolling of a defendant's speedy trial rights. It is not enumerated in 2945-72. Accordingly, Mr. Belleville asked this court to vacate his conviction.
Why is this discovery supplemental? The states responded the next day. They said, we're going to produce this. Why is it supplemental?
Yes, Your Honor.
It doesn't seem anything new. It was something that was contemplated from the beginning.
Yes, Your Honor. The trial court had brought up this discovery prior to the defendant's request for discovery several weeks prior. And the term supplemental discovery is actually coming from the discovery rules, where it states, Criminal Rule 16A states there's an ongoing duty to supplement discovery. And so the term supplemental discovery is taken from that language.
But this wasn't really supplementing discovery. This was the discovery that was intended from the beginning. This wasn't supplemental. You found something new. We need to turn it over. This is what we're turning over. It's going to take us some time to review the files and turn it over.
That is correct. However, it wasn't turned over until 6 weeks later. So there was an initial.
So it would be different if they hadn't responded the next day and waited 6 weeks and had one response.
In that case, that would be an unreasonable length of delay. So 6 weeks has never been found to be a reasonable delay.
What do we do then with the fact that, I know it's a big volume of video, but they offered to let the defense come over and watch?
Yes, Your Honor. It's clear from the transcripts that all parties, the state, the court, and defense, were on the same side, that they had determined that defense counsel wasn't going to be going
it
to the prosecutor.
It wasn't practical. I understand that. But technically, the prosecutor said, come on over if you want.
Yes, Your Honor. And in that same pretrial hearing, at the end, everyone came to the conclusion that the state would turn over the video via this DVR and would get it over to the defense. And so.
But my question is, if it was impractical for the defense to review quickly, isn't it impractical to believe the prosecutor could review quickly?
It may be, but in this situation, no. And the reason being that Mr. Belleville was the last of his co-defendants to be indicted and arraigned. Several of his other co-defendants were indicted and arraigned and pled prior to Mr. Belleville. So the state had more time, not less, to get together this discovery and turn it over.
Did his co-defendants request that discovery and have it?
So there is discussion of one of the co-defendants who did request the video, and so that is why the trial court brought it up at the very first arraignment with Mr. Belleville and his counsel.
All right, so you're telling me that the video was provided to the other defendant's counsel?
There is not evidence that it was provided in this record. The one thing that I will say is that the state did tell in the October 9th pretrial that it had copied the video and it would get it over to defense today.
Copied what date?
That was October the 10th. That's transcript page 10. That it had copied the video and would get it to defense today. and then it subsequently took over 3 weeks.
So if it,
for
so,
it,
so if it had got it to the defense on October 10th, would that have been reasonable?
In this situation, still no.
What would have been reasonable?
It would have been reasonable for the state to get it over at the first available opportunity. It's not clear from the record when that opportunity was. This is just the first instance.
Would 2 weeks have been reasonable? I mean, 2 weeks doesn't seem very long.
It may have been.
Well, if it was 2 weeks, then that wouldn't toll the speedy trial time. I mean, there wouldn't be any speedy trial problem.
That could be, but that's not the facts that we have here, where they.
But if your argument is they didn't turn it over in a reasonable time, then you need some argument about what a reasonable time would have been.
So based off the initial discovery request and the filing, we agree that that was a one-day tolling event.
Okay, so you think 1 day was all that was reasonable to do discovery?
In this case, that's when the state filed their response. So that is the appropriate tolling event under 294972.
They filed a response saying we're going to provide more discovery. They responded to the request. They didn't provide the discovery.
That is correct.
So they're certainly entitled to a reasonable time to respond to discovery under our case law. So what do you think that would have been? Just the one day was it?
I think it depends on the situation. As I said, this record is not clear when the state had copied the video or was ready to turn it over, or when it had turned it over to the co-defendants' attorneys. What is clear is that there were three other co-defendants who also, at least one, requested this video prior to Mr. Belville being arraigned, and the state was already working on it when Mr. Belville was arraigned.
You don't know. I think I heard you say you don't know whether the video was turned over to the other two defendants.
That is correct.
All right. So they may have pled prior to their counsel seeing any video. Correct?
That is correct.
In fact, that's what you're telling me, at least in one.
I am not aware of whether or not it was ever provided to the other co-defendants. What I can tell you is that they did plead, and at least one had requested the video.
Okay, requested it, but you don't know if it was delivered, so you can't make the assumption that the prosecutor had a copy of the video before even the request was made on behalf of your client.
The state did make it clear that they had the video at the initial arraignment of Mr. Belville. So they did have the video at that point, and it had been requested brought by other co-defendants.
Okay. And if they had just copied over everything and handed it to the defense, wouldn't the defense have had to take time to review it, just like what happened?
They may have, but the fact of the matter is, this, for it to be a tolling event, it has to be placed on the record prior to the expiration of the tolling period, and that wasn't done. It was only done after Mr. Belville asserted his speedy trial rights, and then the court reverse-engineered tolling events. Mr. Belville wasn't on notice.
Wait a second. You keep saying that, and you said that in your brief, but we've never said that when there is a tolling event, like a motion or something else that tolls, that the judge has to announce in advance that this is a tolling event. It's clear our case law says that a request for discovery is a tolling event. You don't have to put that on the record. You don't have to announce that first. We've never held that.
State v. Rue does say that a court has to, which is from this court.
Based on a continuance.
Correct.
That's a different section of the rule, and that's a completely different situation.
Yes, we're asking this court to find that, one, that supplemental discovery does not constitute a tolling event, and if the court isn't inclined to reach that issue, then the trial court must give notice to a defendant that it is creating or ordering a tolling event so that the defendant has an opportunity to object and is on notice. It's a defendant's right to either waive his speedy trial rights or forego reviewing that evidence. And Mr. Belville wasn't in the position to make that choice here. He did not request.
So you think any time a tolling event occurs, a judge now should have to tell the defendant in advance that this is a tolling event because the rule says it's a tolling event?
That would be helpful, Your Honor, so that a defendant could make an informed choice.
Well, isn't it, in particular this case, it seems like the record indicates that the court and the prosecutor and defense were well aware that speedy trial time was running. The court It came up several times in pretrial conference, discussed in conjunction with discovery. The record even has that the trial court on numerous occasions asked the state whether it was turning over the evidence anytime soon because it needed to happen in 90 days.
That is correct, Your Honor.
If the court was going to deviate from that, you say the court needed to give defendant notice, an opportunity to either forego it or go to trial.
Correct, Your Honor. And the lower court found that there was no tolling event placed on the record. So a defendant was not on notice to make either one of those two choices.
But isn't that up to their counsel?
Mr. Belville's counsel, trial counsel, did state at the hearing on the motion to dismiss that he never requested the video. The first time that it was brought up was by the trial court saying, I know this has been a problem in other co-defendants' cases. State, get on it.
Okay, so you're saying your client never requested the video?
Correct. That's what defense counsel for Mr. Belville said in the motion to dismiss hearing.
What about your second proposition dealing with one of the trial court's reasons was you didn't turn over reciprocal discovery, but you were never asked? Is that correct?
That is correct. And this court has case law that says when the state specifically requests for reciprocal discovery, failure to turn it over does constitute a tolling event. Here, the state never requested reciprocal discovery, and the first time they brought it up is again at that same motion to dismiss hearing where they asked the court to find that tolling was indefinitely, that Mr. Belville's speedy trial tolled indefinitely because of the failure to turn over reciprocal discovery.
So one, they never asked for it.
Correct.
Two, was there any to turn over?
Based off this record, we don't know. And there was none turned over. There was no alibi turned over. There was no expert witness reports turned over, which are all specifically contemplated in the discovery rules. As a practical matter, defendants rarely have discovery to turn over. It is the state's burden to prosecute defendants and provide evidence beyond a reasonable doubt that they are guilty of that crime. It's not the defendant's burden to create evidence to turn over to the...
Well, nobody's asking them to create the evidence, but do they have to make a pronouncement then? I have no evidence to turn over, and put that on the record.
As a practical matter, that would be the best practice. This court has never determined whether or not that's explicitly required, and so we are asking the court to make that determination.
Well, wouldn't that pretty much close the door on the tolling, any tolling, to say, we don't have anything. So the days are still... flying by.
It would. In this case, though, Mr. Belville wouldn't have had notice of that ruling of this court, and so it wouldn't apply to him specifically. But moving forward, it would apply to every prospective criminal.
Why would the burden be on the defendant to say, I have nothing, if nothing is asked?
I agree with Your Honor. I don't think that it should be the burden on the defendant. Discovery rules contemplate sharing so that there is a full and fair adjudication.
But nobody's going to turn over evidence that's not requested.
Exactly. And also the fact of the matter is, when there's nothing to provide, it's redundant. It seems a burden on the defendant to affirmatively state that they don't have anything to provide.
If there was no request by the defense for the videos, and there's no request for reciprocal discovery, why should this court care about this case?
This court should care about this case because there are two questions that have never been answered by this court. One, with the second proposition of law, must a defense attorney make some sort of affirmative statement that it has no discovery to provide? That's never been determined by this court. It would be a per se prejudicial ineffective assistance of counsel if that is the sole reason for tolling events for defendants in the future. And secondly, this court hasn't addressed the supplemental discovery issue and whether or not that can be a tolling event that is not specifically enumerated in 29 4572.
I want to make sure I have this right, just because you've used a lot of dates, some without numbers. My understanding of the record is that he did make a motion for discovery from the state. The very next day, 1,200 pages of documents were delivered to him, and then there was a conversation about the video regarding surveillance at an extraordinary length of time. And what I'm hearing from you is, in a transcript, and I'd like to know the page number, you say on October 10th, the state says, we have the video, we will deliver it.
Yes, Your Honor, that is October the 9th, transcript, page 10. They said that they had copied the video, and they further said they would get it done today, and then did it, and turned over the video 3 weeks later.
You would agree with me that once the motion is filed by the defendant for a full disclosure, that the reciprocal discovery rule, which is the final sentence of the provision, attaches, that the defendant has to then turn over anything in their possession, and there's that laundry list. How would the state ever know that the defendant has nothing, or that they're waiting to collect all these things that they're obligated to do under the rule? So explain to me what you would have us write regarding that, since it's automatically reciprocal under the rule.
I think it can be, yes, Your Honor, I think it can be presumed that a defendant has nothing to provide unless it affirmatively provides evidence, such as alibi evidence or an expert report, which has specific timing requirements as contemplated in the criminal rules already.
You would agree with me that our rule doesn't make a presumption that a defendant has nothing. What the rule presumes is that you have something, and then because you've made the motion on the state, you have an obligation to turn it over, and these are all the things that you have to turn over.
Yes, Your Honor. The rule states if you have something, you have to turn it over. We're in a situation where if you don't have anything, do you have to make an affirmative statement that you don't have anything? And so that's not contemplated by the rules. The rules say if you have evidence to share, share it. And we presume attorneys are competent and follow the discovery rules.
Your time is up.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Anderson.
Thank you, Chief Justice. May it please the court, my name is Brigham Anderson. I'm the Lawrence County prosecuting attorney representing the state of Ohio. I want to address first the issue or the notion that this video wasn't requested. Discovery was requested in this case. We collected the video pursuant to a search warrant that was taken at Mr. Belville's home. The video was a DVR system that had both interior and exterior video. So we indict, and all four of these defendants were indicted together, by the way. This wasn't a piecemeal indictment. We indicted them all together. The defendant was initially arrested in July on one count of trafficking in drugs, the same day as a search warrant. He was medically OR'd, meaning he had a medical condition. He was OR'd out. So he was then later, I think July 24th, indicted by the grand jury, and he didn't get arrested until September 3rd. And I think the reason for that delay is he was actually in the hospital, was what was taking place. But the defense requests discovery. The state has an obligation to produce it. We collect this evidence, and this is evidence. Not only was it evidence of crimes committed, but it was also evidence favorable. And if you look at the state's response to discovery, the one we filed the day after the demand was made. So demands made September 16th, 2019. We file a response September 17th, the very next day. We include with it 1,200 pages of discovery. We also include with it that we have collected this DVR system and that we have it, that we're viewing it, and that we're going to copy it. But we also tell defense counsel in the discovery response, you're welcome to come to the prosecutor's office and view it. It was
right,
months.
Can I stop you right there? You said there were three other defendants.
Yes.
Okay. I'm led to believe that you created a video for the three other defendants.
Not correct, Your Honor.
Okay, so
inform me on that. The three other defendants pled without seeing the video.
Okay, that's what I wanted to ascertain.
The video pertained to those defendants,
right,
as they were complicit in trafficking and drugs taking place in this residence, but it pertained more to Mr. Belville, and here's why. One of the evidence favorable is on one of the counts that Mr. Belville was charged with complicity, he wasn't even in the house. Right, so that's evidence favorable to the defendant that on this particular date when co-defendant, and I can't remember her name, does the transmission of drugs to the confidential informant, David Belville wasn't in the house. Now the evidence was that it was David Belville's drugs, that David Belville was directing the trafficking, and that's why the fourth count was engaging in a pattern of corrupt activity.
So discovery request is made? And you said September 10th?
September 16th, 2019.
Okay, the next day you give over documents?
Yes.
Correct? And do you say, we're working on the video?
Yes.
So there's more to come, and it's a video. And at that point, you did not have the video compiled in a format to turn over. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. Let me explain why. So this was a home surveillance DVR system, and you couldn't just copy it onto a thumb drive and then play it on a computer. So we had no way of copying it, which became a big problem and why it took 43 days to do it. What we actually had to do was get on Amazon, order a new DVR system, because it was proprietary. The only way you could view it, I could have copied it to a thumb drive, but nobody could watch it, so it wouldn't have done them any good. So I had to actually purchase another DVR system so that we could take the hard drive, copy it to the new hard drive, and provide it to defense counsel. And that's what we ended up doing, and that's why it took the 43 days to do that. And in fact, we had many discussions, not only about that video, but there were also four buy videos where a confidential informant goes in the house and purchases drugs on audio video recording. In fact, on October 3rd, so prior to turning over the DVR system, October 3rd, defense counsel actually came to the prosecutor's office and viewed those videos.
So you're saying that the defendant, the defense counsel, you and the court had conversations about this video and the fact that it's coming?
Yes, Your Honor, many. And at each pretrial, on the record, we had these discussions.
But so at the pretrials, there was an awareness that the speedy trial time was getting close.
Yes, there was an awareness that he hadn't waived time and that he was in jail.
Right.
But there were also known tolling factors.
But nobody's discussed tolling at the pretrial.
We never do.
Well, and I don't have the exact page number in the record where the judge was kind of concerned that we're getting close here. We got to get this done in 90 days.
Yes.
And wouldn't it then been incumbent upon the state to say, Your Honor, we're working as fast as we can on this. We're going to ask that the time be told, or we'll just give what we have and it won't be complete?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. And the reason is because the court never sets forth the various factors that toll. And in this case, there are two, but specifically the fact that discovery was ongoing. And everyone knew the discovery was ongoing, and we could not produce the DVR without purchasing the system off the internet, transferring it. And fortunately, there was somebody in my office that was able to do that, because it was beyond my comprehension of how to even do it. The other tolling factor, which I think is important, is the fact that the defense never responded to discovery. And Your Honor asked the question, we never requested it. And the reason we never requested it is Criminal Rule 16H says that it's automatically reciprocal without further need for demand.
Right. Okay. So if they don't have any, then what?
They typically tell us we don't have any. They file a response saying there is no discovery or we have no witnesses.
But you agree that the rule doesn't require that?
No, I believe the rule does require a reciprocal discovery response.
Reciprocal discovery?
Correct.
If you have it, does it require a defendant to say, if you don't have any, we don't have any?
I believe it does. How else would we know whether they have it or not?
You don't get anything.
Well, true, and in this case, we didn't get anything. But there is a requirement that they give us any discovery that they have.
But how can logically time for speedy trial toll waiting for something that isn't there?
Yeah, this court specifically addressed that question in State versus Palmer. And what this court said is that there's this defense has an obligation to respond to discovery. So this court has already said, yes, defendants have an obligation to respond. And in State versus Palmer, they said after 30 days, then it's told beyond that point, which is exactly what the Fourth District Court of Appeals said in this case. Because in State versus Palmer, it was the facts are almost identical to the facts in this case. The only difference is at the time, Criminal Rule 16 required the state to actually request it. And the issue before the court in State versus Palmer is, was the state required to file a motion to compel? And this court said no, it was not. And so when the rule changed, and I was an assistant prosecutor before the rule changed, and we always demanded discovery with our answer to discovery. But when the rule changed, we stopped doing that as it was no longer needed and haven't done it for many years after the change of Criminal Rule 16. You know, the fact that we didn't demand it, I don't believe is necessary, as the rule specifically states we don't have to demand it. And this court has already decided the issue of whether the defendant has to answer discovery, and they've decided that they do. And that if they don't, then the time is told. So there are two tolling factors here, and the Fourth District Court of Appeals went through the time, and either one or both are sufficient that this case would have been tried within time. Of course, as you know, the defendant pled guilty to one count as a negotiated plea and was sentenced pursuant to that, and was sentenced pursuant to that agreement between the state and the defense. The retroactivity portion I do want to address.
Counselor, before you go that, did you represent that 16H places a burden on the defense to tell you that they have, in writing, that they have no evidence to give?
No, 16H states that the state does not have to demand reciprocal.
Right, I got
state
that.
State versus Palmer,
okay,
from this court, says that the state or the defendant has to file an answer, has to give an answer, or time is told. And the only difference in State versus Palmer and State versus Belleville that we're arguing today is at the time of State versus Palmer, the defendant or the state actually had to request discovery, that was prior to criminal 16.
Well, then doesn't that change it? Because if Palmer requires the defendant to give an answer, it gives an answer to a request. It's at the time of Palmer came out, the rule was different.
The rule was different, Your Honor. Right. So no, it doesn't change it in any way, because the rule of law from this court says that the defense has to answer discovery. And the criminal rule 16 changed to the point where the state no longer had to demand discovery, as it was automatically reciprocal with a filing by a defendant of a demand.
Right. So without question, there's a requirement. If you have discovery, defendant, you are required to give it to us.
Correct.
And if you don't have any,
you're required to tell us.
And so you read that from the rule.
I read that from State versus Palmer.
So you're asking us to essentially apply Palmer in this situation after the change in the rule. And
yes, Your Honor.
Do you think it creates any undue burden?
I do not. It's not an undue burden at all. The defense, and oftentimes in criminal cases, defendants do have discovery. They do have witnesses that they list. They do have documents that they want to produce. They do have discovery to present at trial. So it's not uncommon. And if, in fact, this defendant had no discovery, a one-line answer would have sufficed.
You're absolutely right. Practically, it makes perfect sense. Just I'm grappling with whether it's required. And then, too, of course, if there was discovery that the defendant planned to use but hadn't turned over, that's a pretty good case for excluding it, correct?
Correct. And I can tell you, too, you know, the Court of Appeals, if you read into the decision, they capped it when we had a pretrial conference in which I represented the court, the discovery was complete. So they capped the tolling time, didn't extend it into the motion to dismiss, which I kind of disagree with. And the reason why is because oftentimes in criminal trials, I get discovery the day before, or I get discovery 3 days before, or I get discovery the week before. Rarely is it, you know, close to when we give an answer to discovery. Never have I had a trial judge tell a defendant they can't produce the evidence, even though they only gave it to me a day or two before. It just doesn't happen. So, you know, at the time that I said discovery was complete, I was talking about the state's discovery was complete. The DVR had been turned over. We had turned over everything that we had. Our office does have open file discovery. And in this case, I invited defense counsel to the office. And defense counsel took me up, came to the office, and did view some video.
When you said when you disclosed to the court that discovery was complete, did you say we haven't gotten discovery from defendant, or we're still waiting for theirs, or I mean, was there any reference?
There was no discussion about defendant's discovery. My representation to the court was based upon the state's discovery, and at that time it was complete.
And when you said they came over, that was just for the buy videos, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. Well, the DVR contained months of data. And it, as the trial court said, and the Court of Appeals quoted, defense counsel would have had to bring a cot. You know, it was nothing that defense counsel could watch in its entirety. And there were portions of the video that were important to the state, and there were portions of the video that were important to the defendant. And we acknowledged that in our initial discovery response. So, you know, the DVR that was collected was needed as evidence for both the state and the defendant. The co-defendants, although it was evidence in their cases, it wasn't as important to them, maybe, as it would have been to Mr. Belleville. And those co-defendants worked out plea agreements, pled without the video. So the first time we were able to actually copy the video, we gave it to defense counsel. And that was the process by which I explained of copying
the video. And so while you were preparing during these 43 days, that's when you disposed of the other three cases?
Your Honor, I'm not sure about that, and the reason is some of the cases may have been disposed of prior to the arrest of Mr. Belleville. Remember, these indictments were in July.
So there was no contingency with their pleas to cooperate against Mr. Belleville?
There may have been. One of the co-defendants was Mr. Belleville's mother, and I don't believe that that was a contingency in her case. But the one, I believe, Mendoza, and I'm going off memory, there was an agreement for the defendant to testify. Typically, how we handle that is the defendant pleads guilty and sentence is left to a later date. So it's possible a defendant or two could have pled guilty and the sentence hadn't been given. But none of the other three cases was this DVR an issue as it was in Mr. Belleville's case. So we're asking the court to uphold the ruling of the Fourth District Court of Appeals and find that both tolling factors, D and E, of 29-4572 apply in this case. Without any other questions? Thank you very much.
Counsel, you've used your time. You may take a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. As opposing side just mentioned, that oftentimes they have supplemental discovery that is shared either the day or the week before trial. Under the Fourth District's opinion, that would toll speedy trial up until that point, either the day or the week before trial. That would completely circumvent a defendant's...
So opposing counsel said that they indicated in their initial discovery response that they were providing these videotapes. Was that wrong?
No, that wasn't wrong, Your Honor.
So again, this is discovery that was contemplated from the beginning. It's not supplemental. He told you they were going to provide it.
Your Honor, it was. The lower court's decision said that supplemental discovery tolls until that later date. So they tolled speedy trial time until October 29th.
But again, that's not really the issue here, because this wasn't supplemental discovery, right? This was discovery that was contemplated from the beginning.
Your Honor, the lower court's decision would continue to affect criminal...
So maybe there's dicta that's wrong, but as far as your case, that's not true.
Your Honor, it is our position that it was supplemental discovery. It was discussed at the arraignment prior to the discovery request, and then... you know, at every single pretrial thereafter. So it was supplemental discovery and not merely...
So how is, if I say in my initial discovery response, I'm going to provide you this, and then I provide you that, how is that supplemental? That's part of the discovery response.
Your Honor, you have an initial discovery request, and then you provide additional discovery at a later date. That's how it's supplemental. It's according to Criminal Rule 16A, the state has an ongoing duty to provide supplemental discovery. You have an initial request,
So if you discover additional information that you did not contemplate originally, you have a duty to supplement your discovery request. We're all familiar with that, but that's not what went on here, right? This was not something that was supplemented later on. They didn't find something and say, oh, we need to turn this over. We haven't been able to get together yet.
Your Honor, whether you call it continuous or supplemental, it's our position that the same rule applies. The state has an ongoing duty, and that ongoing duty can't be a tolling mechanism that can be used to circumvent a defendant's speedy trial rights. I would ask that this court vacate Mr. Belleville's convictions on the basis of impermissible supplemental discovery tolling. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision.